Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to cleanorigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to cleanorigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for 10% off your purchase. That's cleanorigin.com, code RADIO10.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer? Whenever I want?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. 94% of Sleep Number smart sleepers report better sleep. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. To find a store near you, visit sleepnumber.com.
With a new Atlantic hurricane season in full swing, a new hurricane forecast model is ready to improve forecast accuracy as well as increase our understanding of tropical cyclones. Joining me today is Dr. Sundaraman Gopalakrishnan, senior meteorologist and leader of the modeling team that is behind NOAA's newest hurricane forecast model. The Hurricane Analysis and Forecast System, or HAFS, integrates the best of existing hurricane forecast models while adding in key advancements in research. The result is a more accurate forecast that helps scientists as well as the public. Gopal, thank you for joining us on the Weather Geeks podcast.
Thank you, Marshall, for inviting me.
Well, you know, we were just talking off air about how we have a lot of mutual colleagues and some mutual research interests across boundary layer meteorology, urban meteorology, and hurricanes. But I am going to start the podcast with the question that I ask every Weather Geeks guest. How did you become a weather geek?
Yes, that's a nice question, Marshall. I'm from southern part of India, and then at that time when I was in probably as a kid, I didn't grow up as a weather geek, but I used to watch the skies. Basically, that's where I started my science with, and in fact, I still remember constructing my because of resource issues, $100-$200 getting a telescope was a difficult bit for me at that time. So I used to create my own telescopes, which is very relevant to the work that I do now in a different context, though. But then those telescopes, I could even look at. When I was in college, I used my telescope to look at Halley's Comet, but it didn't work out that way. But then I could even look at bistars, and those were the interests to start with, basically. And then when I went to Indian Institute of Technology for my PhD, my interest during that time was more on turbulence and chaos, because chaos, I wanted to see some orderliness in chaos. That's where my interest started in. And then I used to watch the plumes. Then I got involved more in plumes and how they loop around. And then that's where I started modeling, basically, and all. And then slowly what happened was I found more interest in predictability issues, basically. Me getting into, I grew up with this kind of science background and looking at the skies, which means America was something that I really wanted to work and do my sciences in, basically, because I've always been fascinated looking at people going to moon and stuff like that. And then that's how my interest in coming here started with from the southern tip of India all the way. And then I migrated to Delhi, IIT Delhi, to do my PhD. And then I migrated here to start with working on boundary layer meteorology. That's where I think we have been in touch for a while, more or less on urban meteorology. But then it so happened when I took up my first job in Science Application International Corporation. That's when, in fact, it was serendipity in the sense the project that I was going to work on urban meteorology, instead they said, can you work on hurricanes? That's where my passion for hurricanes started actually way back in 2000, and then I could never come out of it. Basically, I've been involved more in modeling and understanding hurricanes, basically, and hurricane science. That's where, and initially it was with the Science Application International Corporation. I was working at the National Weather Service, specifically at Environmental Modeling Center, and then I migrated to understand more science of hurricanes. I migrated to the NOAA research, which is AOML, Atlantic Meteorological and Oceanographic and Meteorological Laboratory. That's where I am.
Let me give you a little background so that you understand a little bit more about Dr. Gopalakrishnan, but he affectionately goes by Gopal, so that's what I'm going to call him. He is a senior meteorologist at NOAA's Atlantic Oceanographic and Meteorological Laboratory and HRD Hurricane Research Division. He leads the Hurricane Modeling and Prediction Program. He has been the leader of the modeling team developing NOAA's Hurricane Analysis Forecast System, or HAFS, which is what we're here to talk about today, because it's a really exciting development. I believe this new hurricane model is coming online in this hurricane season, so I look forward to learning more. He was the development manager for NOAA's Hurricane Forecast and Improvement Program, and is the principal architect for NOAA's HWRF system, which I know if you follow hurricanes in the hurricane season, you've heard a meteorologist mention the HWRF, or you've seen it on Twitter somewhere. And as you heard, he was raised in southern India, educated in India and the United States. I want to geek out a little bit because you heard Gopal mention the boundary layer. And that's where we know each other from. A lot of my research is focused on things like urban meteorology. And for those of you listening or watching Weather Geeks, you may not be familiar with the term, but it essentially is the roughly about the first 1 kilometer of the atmosphere from the surface up to about 1 kilometer. But it varies and it has diurnal variation. But it's really essentially where the atmosphere can still feel the influence of the surface. And that has quite a bit of influence on atmospheric processes. And we need to know more about the boundary layer from an observational and a modeling standpoint. But Gopal has actually turned his attention more to modeling hurricanes. So before we go down that road, Gopal, can you just tell the listeners and viewers a little bit more about what HRD and AOML are? Because many people, you and I are familiar with your organization, but many of our viewers and listeners may not be.
Atlantic Oceanographic and Meteorological Laboratory, that's located in Miami and in the Keys. Basically, I can look at the ocean from my office room. That's how. We do more or less focused research on. We have divisions, physical oceanographic division, and then we have ocean chemistry division too, where we look at the ocean chemistry related to the Atlantic Ocean. And then we have the physical oceanography division that, and then the hurricane research division where I'm working, where we focus more on hurricane research, basically modeling hurricanes. And then we also fly into hurricanes more. Many of our colleagues and even I have flown in hurricanes too, basically, and we procure those data sets, and then in the lab as a whole, we have our interest is on predictions, basically, and science, basically, improving science of hurricanes or the ocean circulation. It could be and related to the Atlantic Ocean.
So it's a really important part of NOAA's research labs, and we've had other colleagues on before from places like the National Severe Storm Lab and other parts of the NOAA spectrum. I want to pivot now to the hurricane season. We are recording this in late June, and we've already had 3 named storms. So from a climatological perspective, the hurricane season is off to an early start, if you will. And I read that NOAA is releasing the new HFS model. My understanding, and certainly we'd love to hear more from you, is that you're going to run that in parallel with, I guess, existing systems like HWRF and HMON over an evaluation period. And then eventually the thought is that it would completely replace those. So tell the listeners and viewers all about the HAFS model, why it's different, why it's better, and what have you learned in its evaluation period?
Yeah, I think it's important to have a perspective of what we have been doing. I mean, I'm excited about something that because I should get to the perspective. Going back in time, about 20 years, I've been working in NOAA for about 20 years now, 23 years since 2000. So, I think I need to travel back a little bit in time so that I would be able to give the right perspective. Now, when we started, when I was in the 90s, we were focused more on hurricane track problem, basically. And then we had models like GFS and, with coarser grid resolution, basically. And then in the 90s, we were more focused on track, and then came when I started developing HWAR, basically. That's when it was right about 2003 or 2004. The focus and the needs changed. Came the year 2005, Hurricane Katrina, Rita. These were devastating storms, not only in terms of, and then our prediction ability. We thought, oh, we need to improve our winds also, which means it's not only track problem, it became an intensity problem. And then from there on, we started, when the first version of HWARF was developed, the focus was more on intensity prediction, basically. And if you want to do get to, for example, rain bands, basically, or modeling rain bands, we may not be able to run global models, basically, at that resolution, because you need quick turnaround time for forecast. We need to do a forecast in about 96 minutes to 1 hour. So what we do is develop a numerical technique or a technology called moving nest, basically, wherein it's like telescope that I was talking about, better resolution, you get to the better resolution. That's how it's related to my spatial telescope, the idea of spatial. Yeah. So you try to focus in the region where hurricane reside, and then we move. As you move, as the hurricane moves, we move the nest so that we can focus on exactly the inner core region of the hurricane, which is what is important for intensity prediction. At the same time, the hurricane interacts with the environment. So it's a technique that's unique, basically, that's more or less developed. It started with GFTL, but with the HWARF, we became better with those technique, with higher resolution, with better physics in the model. So that's like a magnifying glass moving around the hurricane. So that is uniqueness in hurricane prediction. Actually, the modeling that we use, that's the advancement that's required for hurricane prediction. So with that in mind, the HWARF was developed. But what was happening was, before that time, intensity predictions were almost, I would say, it was almost unknown, or it was at the zero state, I would say.
Yeah, we weren't making any progress.
We were not making any progress, and then came in 2009 when HWARF went into operations. Then came a project called Hurricane Forecast Improvement. Now it's a program, a HFIP program, and that's where we started making progress, because we started working with the community at that time. And then we started working between NOAA research and NOAA operations. And this HFIP brought all of us together, the whole community together, between operations and research and the community together. And there, what happened, what we started seeing was, any model improvements used to come both from research and as well as operations. And then we were able to accelerate progress in that case. A new physics package used to come to the model, or anything used to get shared immediately. And what we saw at the end of it is that, almost 10 years into HFIP, we improved with the HWARF alone, we improved predictions of not only track, but also intensity. That also came from our own understanding, using of observations to improve predictions. All this went into the model. As we see, for example, the boundary layer that you're talking about, we improved the model scheme. It's not only the telescopic nest technology that we are talking about, the observations we started using. Not only usually we use it for initializing the models, but here was the first time in HWARF we started using that to improve the boundary layer processes in the model. And we tried to tune it with our flight level data. And there, boom, we saw that the structure of tropical cyclones, especially when you magnify in those areas, started improving. And then we also started seeing improvements in intensity, especially rapid intensification of storms.
Were you starting to capture, in addition to these intensity changes, were you starting to capture things like eyewall replacement cycle?
Yes. One is eyewall replacement cycle, nice rain bands. And not only that, we also started capturing with some success rapid intensification. And in my mind, rapid intensification is very, very complex to get predicted because you need the convection at the right place to fire up at the right time within the hurricane circulation. And that's why we need those resolutions, basically. And most of my research, apart from my team research, is also focused on using these models to improve rapid intensification, basically, processes and predicting them. So that's a complex mechanism. It's not only the ocean that's involved, but then you need better physics to model these rapid. That's where we got to HWARF. Now, at the end of it, what we found was, I'm going to talk about the next transition to halves, what excites me more than anything else. We had moved from a state of no intensity prediction to a state wherein we are 50% better or 50% better in intensity. We were starting, and we were able to even get to a point wherein we were able to get there with rapid intensification as well, and starting to understand the rapid intensification processes. But then one should remember that HWARF was bottom up, in the sense I was at that stage, I started the development, and then HFIP and then the community picked it up, and then it grew as a model inside out. But here comes UFS, the HAFS, Hurricane Analysis and Forecast System, that we started developing thanks to the collaborative work between NOAA Research and NOAA Operation NW National Weather Services, especially Environmental Modeling Center and the STI, which is involved Office of Science and Technology Integration, that's involved. So what we started thinking was, okay, instead of having one, just the model for hurricane, let's have this as a common modeling infrastructure built within the unified forecast system, which lodges the GFS as well. So that, as soon as you do that, what happens is you are able to bring the community, the GFS, and the codes together in all in one framework, basically. And that is,
before you go on, when you say codes, you're actually talking about the computing code.
Yes.
These models are basically large computer programs that have been coded in these complex forecast languages.
Yes, I can go in the way to look at is that we divide the whole atmosphere or a region or a globe into grid points, basically, and we do all these computations at these grid points effectively, and the resolution is a matter of improvement, basically. And then we need, as computers have evolved, better resolutions have come into being, and the telescopic nest, as I mentioned, is required to get fast turnaround, basically. And that's how these computer models operate, the hurricane models especially. But coming back to the question on what is interesting or what is the improvement in UFS, we are starting, or the unified forecast system, we are starting with a system that's already like shared, basically, between NOAA Research, NOAA Operations, and then we have added this innovation on top of the basic code, which is GFS, we have, and then the regional part of, we call that the dynamical core, came from our partners at GFDL, Geophysical Fluid Dynamical Laboratory. It's called the FE3 system. And then the innovation here is the telescopic nesting, and then all within the framework of the UFS, wherein we would be able to accelerate quickly. Secondly, also what we are finding is the moment we are starting it already, it's a faster code when compared to HWARF, as a result of which we are able to, within an hour of runtime, we are able to get more things done, basically. And in the sense, we improved the resolution, especially of the regional domain in which this telescopic nest moves. So what we are finding is within the same time, it's a faster code that can run, and already we are finding we have brought the best of everything together from the previous generation of the model. And then we have also improved the resolution within the UFS. The HAPS is residing within the Unified Forecast System. All this, what we are finding through our initial testing, which last 3 years we have been developing and testing, we find about 10 to 15% improvements in tracks already. And in terms of intensity prediction, we were looking at Ian, we are seeing some promise in terms of rapid intensification as well.
When we get back, I'm going to further geek out with Gopal on how NOAA is improving hurricane forecasts.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget. Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first 3 orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we are back on the Weather Geeks podcast. I'm Dr. Marshall Shepard from the University of Georgia, and I'm speaking with Dr. Sanjay Raman Gopalakrishnan, affectionately called Gopal by most of us in the community. And he just gave an outstanding geek out on how we are improving hurricane forecasting using these high resolution models. And I want to give you a little analogy just to keep in the back of your head. Dr. Gopal really talked about the telescoping nature of these meshes, as these grids that follow the hurricane, if you will. You hear this term resolution, and I want to give you an example of something that you may be more familiar with. You all probably have a smartphone in your hand, and that smartphone has a camera, and it has megapixel designation. The more megapixels you have on that camera, the finer detail in that picture. Well, think of the resolution in a model as one of those pixels. So the more grid points we have, the more structure and actual processes the models can resolve. And so that's where Dr. Gopal is really pioneering efforts here with these high resolution modeling systems that are following the system along, because you heard him say something that's very important. For many years, hurricane intensity forecasts lagged track forecasts. Hurricane track is often governed by much larger scale processes that the GFS, the European model, Canadian model, UK Met Office model can capture, things like the position of the high pressure systems, jet stream, and so forth. The intensity changes are happening, as I often say when I was at NASA, that you have to pop the hood of the hurricane engine. The intensity changes are happening in those sort of in the ocean, in the core, the eye wall. So talk to us a little bit more about sort of how the new modeling system is going to operate this hurricane season and the plan going forward.
Yeah, this hurricane season, what we wanted to start with is a model that almost is similar to HWARF, so that we can easily, seamlessly transition, in the sense that most of these models are storm-centric, in the sense you have a hurricane, Cindy, for instance. We run the model with the telescopic nest to start with, focused on Cindy. And then we have another storm, Brett. We run it specifically over that storm, Brett. But in the meanwhile, we have already developed technology which is very, very unique. I didn't think that it exists anywhere in the world, that kind of a technology, wherein it's not one hurricane that we can focus on. We can focus on multiple hurricanes at the same time.
Which basically, we just recently had with Brett and Cindy. They were tropical systems.
Exactly. And not only they interact with each other, it is imperative. Right now what we are running is storm-centric. And if we go to, we call it as a domain-centric, wherein you have a huge domain. It could be even a global model. And you can embed multiple nests focusing on multiple storms at the same time. That's the future of what we are thinking. And we have the technology, and it's under development in UFS. The advantage, what we found earlier with the HWARF, although it was slower and it was not, it was more for research than we did at that time, is that storms that are even 1,000 kilometers apart, 500 to 1,000 kilometers apart, they may be able to influence each other in a way. The outflow, that's a big outflow that you see in satellite pictures, those could even influence one another, and that has impacts even on intensity changes. So to further improve hurricane prediction, I think it's imperative that we get to the next generation of these nested grid models, basically. And that's where we have plans, and we are starting to implement. And the advantage with the unified forecast system that we are working with is that it's the skeleton of it already is equipped to do this, basically. The processing power which is required, and the parallel computing that is required, it's all set up that way that we may be able to implement these things much faster, basically.
Yeah, that's very important. A question that many listeners and viewers may have, because I know many listeners and viewers are familiar with the GFS model, the European model, these larger scale global models. I'm imagining in some way the GFS is somehow feeding or initializing these higher resolution models. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. It's like nest inside a nest inside a nest. That's what I would even think about, actually. And then GFS model feeds in data at the boundaries, basically, of a smaller region, basically, regional halves, for example, or HWARF. It feeds in the boundary conditions, so-called boundary conditions, and then those the telescopic nest has the boundary conditions from halves. It's like looking at a telescope once again, bigger scales, larger scales, smaller scale, and the smallest hurricane scale. That's how we have envisioned. So we use the GFS for, as you rightly said, for feeding in the boundary conditions. And the initial conditions are also driven by GFS, but then we also, at high resolution for the model to operate, for example, the inner core, as you mentioned about the hurricane region that we are mentioning about, there we use our flight level data as well as the Doppler data to initialize the storm when they are available. So it's a mix of both the GFS initial condition as well as the high resolution initialization that we use in all these models.
Marshall, if you could sort of wave your magic wand, Gopal, and say, what do I need to really, these models aren't ever going to be exactly perfect, because we know we're dealing with nonlinearity and linearized equations yeah, and chaotic systems and so forth, but they're pretty good now. But what do you still need? What is the sort of holy grail thing that you need? Is it still faster computers, or is there some observation that you still need? What would you say are your needs to improve this high resolution forecast? Yeah.
It's all, thanks for asking. This is all of them. I can tell you why this is. First of all, we need, what is next coming? Basically, now I said in 2005, we were involved in track, and then 2014, we have improved intensity guidance. And then the products. We need more products, especially after landfall. For example, severe weather associated with landfall. I have people now starting to ask me, and which means expectations have also grown. Hey, what Ian, when Ian was making landfall near Fort Myers, people were starting to ask me what will be the influence of that? What will be the winds in Miami or near my home in Broward? People want that kind of information more and more, and people have moved to the coast, and as a result of which, it's so important that we need to have more information. First, track intensity, and then we need to get into products that, for example, rainfall is something that we are looking at. Freshwater flooding is so important for all these because that's the killer. Basically, water is a bigger killer than even winds.
Correct.
So we need to get to freshwater flooding and inland flooding, and then tornadic activities. For all those are the next generation. And as you rightly said, we can't get 100% accurate with, there are predictability issues there. So as a result of which, we want to go probabilistic with all these models, which means we need to run ensembles of these models with perturbations or changes to the initial conditions or boundary conditions for these models. So if you want to go probabilistic, basically, if you want to run the same system 20 times or 30 times, name it, then we need the computational powers, which are growing, actually, as we can see, cloud computing is coming along. And then we are starting to run even HAPS. We have an experimental version that we are starting. We will go next year or so in probabilistic mode. So probabilistic prediction needs both, basically, the computing as well as computing power to run this. And the second thing that we also need is improvements to these models. We have not, while probabilistic prediction, we can simply run these models 20, 30 times. But what we see in more sensitive cases, those are the spread in ensembles to even make it meaningful for the forecasters. We need to get there. We are not there. That's a lot of research required, especially in some of these cases like Sandy or Joaquin, and then I could talk about Michael. There are several cases in which we see that when we run these models, the spread is either too limited or the spread in ensembles is so huge that unless we make meaningful ensembles, we may not be able to help the forecast. So that's one area of research, the holy grail rise there. And in that kind of research, it's not only computing that I said, it's also the improvement towards the physics that we have to have. For example, and where observations come in. We don't have observations in the boundary layer that we have 1 to 2 kilometer. And then we have the UAV, unmanned vehicles coming in on board right now. Can we use those to improve the boundary layer representation in these models? Those are the areas. Will that get a better spread in the models? So these are the future area, and that is equally challenging and exciting too, Marshall.
When we come back, I will ask Gopal to connect the dots to you all as listeners and the public.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to Fail Better, David Duchovny's new podcast with Lemonada Media. On Fail Better, David, who has experienced both low and high-profile failures throughout his life, explores the vast world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives. Each week, he'll chat with guests like Ben Stiller, Bette Midler, and more about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, he hopes listeners can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out now wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back on the Weather Geeks podcast. I'm Dr. Marshall Shepard from the University of Georgia. And we've heard a good deal about the advancement in weather modeling capacity and these high resolution models and the HAFS, or the Hurricane Analysis and Forecast System. But I want to bring this back to the public now. You've been studying hurricanes for a long time. We've seen improvements in track and intensity forecasts. You mentioned Ian earlier, and there were confusions and concerns about how we presented the information in terms of the cone of uncertainty. And you mentioned rainfall as the deadliest aspect of a hurricane. So what do you feel is the general public's biggest misconception about hurricanes from your lens as someone that has studied this from a really more from a modeling and development technique standpoint? But you certainly are producing information that can help forecasters convey risk. So I'm curious about what you see as the greatest misperceptions out there in the public.
Yeah, I think models, as you rightly said, you can't get 100% predictability in these models. And then these models, the National Hurricane Center uses several of these models, including the European Center models for track prediction. And what we are doing is one part of the system, basically. And then public, I would say, nobody should look at these tracks and intensity from a single model to make their own decisions, basically. We follow our guidance. That's what I keep telling. Independent of how many hurricanes are there in the year, you need only one landfall to be really devastating, actually. It could the whole season, even one landfall could be really devastating. So follow not the models, but follow the watches and warning. And there shouldn't be a misconception on following models and saying, hey, this is where the track lies. This model gives a track here. No, that may not. That may be a challenge, basically, because we are. I mean, like the models don't forecast. They just provide a scenario of what could happen. And several models, there are predictability issues with models. For example, Ian was one of the cases wherein most of the models had bias towards the northern part of Florida.
Yeah, my homecoming at Florida State was initially canceled because it looked like at one point it was headed to Tallahassee.
Yeah, exactly. And some of the models, there are predictability issue. And in fact, Marshall, we are looking, that needs research in itself. What is the predictability problem there with Ian? And that's one of the research that we are doing. Nevertheless, what coming back to your question, instead of following models, I think it's imperative that people follow our guidance, basically, from the NSC. And then the watches and warnings are issued there. It's not from the models that we issue watches and warnings. It's based on some part in models, and it's not model all the time.
No, I think you make a great point, because if you look at the official track forecast and intensity forecast, sometimes from the Hurricane Center, it will deviate at times from what all the social meteorologists are posting. One deterministic model run is showing. I see a lot of people just anchored to the models, and the hurricane forecasters at the National Hurricane Center, they compile that information and make the best forecast, and it's not often based on one solution. Final question for you: 5 to 10 years out, what do you foresee as the next great advancement in either hurricane forecasting or modeling capacity?
Yeah, there are two avenues. One, the models will keep improving. Probably we'll see sub-kilometer scale models. One of the areas that we need to explore is use of AI. Artificial intelligence, and then we produce so much of data, basically, and use of AI in universities. How do we use this data to develop better skills of prediction is one, and that use of this data. And we have gone to the extent we are starting to instead of the parameterization schemes that that representation of models using so-called parameterization schemes, it can be replaced with AI techniques. That's what I see in the future. So what I would even suggest is, because you are from a university, there should be, and what I'm seeing is the numerical weather prediction is dwindling down at college levels. Probably a linkage between NWP and AI, artificial intelligence, would build the next generation capacity, basically.
Yeah, I think that's right. We've been dabbling a little bit with artificial intelligence, even in some of the research in my group. Gopal, this has been fascinating. I wish we had more time, but we have a limited time for this podcast. And I knew that this would be a great show because you're such a knowledgeable guest and you're really operating at the forefront of hurricane prediction. It's going to be a busy season, it looks like, or at least normal to possibly trending a little bit above normal. And as you said earlier, it does only take one storm. And so it's important that everyone listening start preparing now. There is some evidence that when we see activity this early, it tends to sort of remain active. And even in spite of the fact that we're in an El Nino or trending into an El Nino, the sea surface temperatures are very warm. That's the fuel supply for these big tropical heat engines that we've discussed today. So thank you so much for joining us on the Weather Geeks podcast.
Thank you, Marshall. Thank you for inviting me.
I'm Dr. Marshall Shepard from the University of Georgia, and I want to thank everyone at NOAA and the Hurricane Research Division, National Hurricane Center, for keeping us safe. You're my go-to for information. Even though I have degrees in meteorology, I always check with what the experts at Miami are saying first. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time on Weather Geeks.